Hey there, it's Mike Trimb, and you're listening to White Line Fever, where rock and roll is still alive like it always has been and it always will be.
Welcome to White Line Fever. It's the first segment of this week's program, but the second part of our interview with Ryan O'Keefe from Airborne. And if you were listening to the last episode, by the way, I think we're up to episode 91, closing in on a century. My name's Steve Mascott, and if you listened to the last episode, you would have heard Thunderstruck by AC/DC was the request from Ryan, which brings us to some recent events. A lot of people were championing the cause of your brother Joel to replace Brian Johnson, even people like Eddie Trunk, who never plays your music. I just wondered, did that cross your radar? Did it ever cross your mind? What if something like that was to happen?
Well, Joel was pretty humbled by the news that everyone was sort of saying that. He was pretty taken back, and he's very humbled. He's been asked before in interviews, what would you do? And he said, well, the first thing I'd do if it ever actually came to happen, the first thing he would do is call Brian Johnson for permission, and the second thing he'd do is call a cab to the airport. very, very humble to hear that, yeah.
What about the rest of the band? I mean, that would have a big impact on everyone else, wouldn't it?
Well, would have been good promo.
have you guys had anything to do with AC/DC? Like, have you... their camp, has there been any sort of cross-pollination or contact over the years?
Malcolm sung Ross, he's come out and sung, he came out, it was quite a while back, came out and sung a chorus of Run 'em Wild, but we've never actually supported AC/DC, but.
Cool. And I'd imagine It's All for Rock and Roll sounds like a tribute to Lemmy, would that be accurate, or...?
That's correct.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about your relationship with Lemmy and how the news of his passing affected you guys.
Well, it happened a few months prior to recording the record. And he was in our first video 10 years ago. And ever since then, we did a bunch of tours with Motorhead. And we would always see them in Europe or festivals, and he'd always pop in, so we'd always, say hello, and he'd always give us advice and stuff like that. Never change what you're doing, never let the industry affect you and all that sort of stuff. And there's definitely a big hole felt now out on the road at the festivals that he's not there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, mate, time for another song. What do you got for us?
Let's do You Could Be Mine by Guns N' Roses.
We'll be right back. Hello, everybody. This is Ron Bumblefoot Thaw. You might know me from Guns N' Roses or not. And you're listening. You're listening to White Line Fever.
Welcome back to the program. We are here in Sheffield, the home of Def Leppard, and I'm here with a member of Def Leppard who, as will become apparent when he starts talking, is not from Sheffield. Vivian Campbell, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. And I'm not from Sheffield. No, but I can do like a Yorkshire accent, a very bad one, obviously. Yeah.
You would have a fair bit of local knowledge, though, where you wouldn't be wanting for advice on where to go for a drink or something like that.
True, yeah. I mean, I've spent a lot of time here, obviously, you know. Although only one of Def Leppard lives here now, Sev. He's you know, been back and forth between here and Dublin over the years, but he's settled now back in his hometown.
Now, a lot of people will be happy to see the end of 2016. Tell us about your year, because it's been nothing if not eventful.
Yeah, it's been a strange year. I'd be glad to see the back of it, you know. I mean, it hasn't been all bad, but yeah, there's been some events. You know, I'm here tonight with Last in Line. Obviously, we're playing. This is the second to last show of our tour. And we end in my hometown of Belfast tomorrow night. But, you know, the Last in Line record was, it's a passion project. You know, it's been really great for me as a guitar player to get back to reconnecting with Vinny and with Jimmy Bain and meeting Andrew Freeman for the first time, and we got the chance to make what we believe is a great record, and we've been very encouraged by the response to it, and we were so excited about it. And a month before the record was released, Jimmy passed away. So that really took the wind out of our sails. We had a major tour in the US planned for February and March and April, and we had to cancel that. And by April, we ended up picking up the pieces. We got Phil Suzanne, the former Ozzy Osbourne bass player, to join us, and Eric Norlander on keyboards to complete the lineup. And so we went out and started doing some dates because we felt we owed it to ourselves, and we certainly owed it to Jimmy and to his memory, because we did make a very strong record, and it seemed like the appropriate thing to get out there and to support the record and not to let it wither on the vine, you know. And like I said, we've been really, really encouraged by the response people have had to the album and indeed to these live shows, and it's just great fun playing this kind of music, you know. It's really aggressive guitar music, and it's been a long time since I had to exercise that muscle, and I'm really enjoying it, you know.
That's interesting you say that. It'll lead to a question further down the track, but it's interesting, I heard an interview you did maybe with Eddie Trunk just after what happened to Jimmy, where you said that he because of, you know, healthcare the way it is in America, he didn't know he was ill, you know what I mean? Like, it's a scary thought, isn't it, you know?
Well, he must have known something was going on. The thing about Jimmy was Jimmy couldn't really cope with life very well, you know. Like, if he would get a parking ticket, he'd tear it up and throw it in the bin. You know, if he got a bill from the tax man, he'd do the same thing, you know. But Jimmy just couldn't deal with the regular kind of thing, and he could have been eligible for the everything in the States called Medicaid, you know. Jimmy didn't have much money. He really didn't have a pot to piss in, to be honest, you know. He wasn't very good managing his money, and to be fair, also he was kind of shortchanged by a lot of the people he worked with in his career. But he's also the kind of person who would have just ignored things, you know. He would have put his head in the sand and just said whatever, you know. Jimmy died with his boots on, you know. We knew he was ill about a month before he died, and we were rehearsing and going out and doing some shows, and we were headed to do the cruise with Def Leppard, and we, Last in Line, played a show in Miami the night before the cruise ship sailed, and that was Jimmy's last gig. He died on the ship. You know, and we offered him the week before, we said, Jimmy, you know, we don't have to do this, we can cancel this, your health is more important. But Jimmy wanted to do it, and he must have known that he was that ill, you know. I mean, he must have felt it in his body, and we knew he had pneumonia at least, but it turns out that was a byproduct of the lung cancer that actually took his life. But Jimmy, just, he was a trooper to the end, you know. He was a rocker, and like I say, he died doing what he loved, you know. He died with his boots on.
Well, every 5 minutes, we're up to four, I think. I'm going to ask you to introduce a song. I guess you want to pick Last in Line. You pick anything in the entire history of recorded music, if you like. What do you got for us first up?
Well, you know, we're here tonight with the Last in Line project, and Jimmy loved the band so much that he went and got a tattoo of Last in Line on his arm, and it was the only tattoo he had in his body. He just felt so connected to this band, and the last couple of years of his life, he was really overcoming his demons of addiction, and the one thing that I think that really helped him get through that time in his life was this band and this project, writing music for this. And Jimmy was a great riff writer, and one of my favorite songs on the record was was titled Jimmy F. Sharp Fast until Andy wrote a lyric for it. Mm-hmm. And actually, when we recorded the track, we hadn't heard what Andy was going to put mm-hmm. on the song yet, so we were still calling it Jimmy F. Sharp Fast. And that song is Martyr. And okay. so that always reminds me of Jimmy, and it always will. Hey, this is Vivian Campbell from Def Leppard and Last in Line, and you're listening to White Line Fever.
So welcome back to the program, and I'm here at freezing Hull, and I'm with Paul Rowley, the coach of the Toronto Wolfpack. I'd imagine is a proud man despite a six-point loss to Hull.
I don't like losing at any point, so I wouldn't want to walk too tall and be too proud, but nevertheless, we've ticked some boxes today. We've dusted some cobwebs off, we've got ourselves a start point, and I'd rather be... probably described as a taskmaster, and we work hard. It's given us a base to work from, and we're going to work hard. But I guess there's an element of satisfaction in the fact that for a bunch of individuals who's come together from all over the world and all over from every corner of the country, there we look very much an established team, and we played some good rugby.
But as a coach, if you put it in perspective, take a step back, you've been training with these guys. They've never trained together. They don't know each other. You have two halves. You've never played together. People say there's no halves left on the market. You can't find one. And it's all come together. I mean, you should have won, really, with Lathwaite when he got into the clear. I mean, when you look back on this maybe in a few months, you'll realise what an amazing performance it was from a coach's point of view.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, yeah, so it's a funny one because we never... It's not in my nature to celebrate defeat, but you're right. You know, you're right. I don't think there's any harm in toasting effort and camaraderie and something that's begun a process that's begun and come a long way. So yeah, we're certainly ahead of where we thought we would be, and yeah, you're right. Our pivots, our fullback, our combinations. Yeah, it was. We looked like we were singing on the same page, and with good practice, we'll get more confident, more slick, and we'll throw more problems at our opposition. So we should have won, and that's probably what's that corner of my mouth, that little scowl is coming from.
Yeah, Lee Radford and Mahi Fanua were just in the room there, and they said, I think it was, you'll walk through the division you're in, Lee Radford said, and Mahi Fanua said you'll go up a division each year, and basically he'll be playing away to Toronto in 3 years. How does that make you feel? Your first game, 80 minutes.
Absolutely brilliant. What I'm really pleased about is people like James Lathwaite, who's been out with 18 months. Bob Bezic's not played for a year. Pownall, a lot of people who's not played for a long time. So to do that and compete and be physically good against Hull, a champion side, is really pleasing. It's inevitable that we're going to get them comments, and that's good and really pleasing, and it does make you smile. But what, you know. As a coach, it kind of makes me a little bit nervous. It's like putting pressure on, and you know, under promise, over deliver, and that's the way we'll work.
You spread the ball in your own quarter in the first 5 minutes. Do you see it as part of your responsibility to entertain?
Well, Daryl Powell pinched my line last week when he said we're in the entertainment industry. I've used that many, many times, and if we're going to attract supporters, but I want to have fun. Our players want to have fun, so on day one of training, I tell my players. Every time, the way we play is fun, hard work, you need to be brave, you need to be bold. But yeah, entertaining is important, but it's more rewarding at the end of it when you come up with a victory.
Why aren't you playing Wigan in a couple of weeks, or next week, when you originally were?
The Manchester City Cup game got rescheduled, and there was a clash, so you know, we had an option to change it to Oral there, but you know, Toronto, I think everybody's seen we're making a bit of a splash. We want to, anything that we do at this moment in time, it's got to be an event. We don't want to, we're not ticking boxes. It's more about the events and building the profile of the club. So we're only doing things that is going to be fitting for us. We very much appreciate the interest from Wigan and Hull today. It's an amazing, amazing compliment to us. But nevertheless, we're happy. Today ticks a box for us, and I feel like that's enough.
Finally, rugby league fans are famously tribal. How do you go about, I suppose, the neutrals are showing interest on social media and all that sort of stuff, but how do you get about them actually, voting with their feet and showing up to your games, the neutrals who probably would like to see you do well? Would you like to see more of them show up?
Absolutely, and you know, you asked me that question, but I reckon we've got an unbelievably talented set of people in the background at Toronto Wolfpack who's, you know, I think they've just hit 10,000 Facebook followers, etc. So they're ticking all the boxes. So, you know, I'll keep coaching and they can keep doing what they're doing because the combination seems to be working.
Thanks, Paul. Congratulations, eh?
Cheers. Thank you.
Thank you. And don't forget to follow WLF Podcast on Twitter. We're now a 24-hour radio station on Radionomy. So just Google Whiteline Fever Radio, Radionomy. And don't forget our Facebook page, Whiteline Fever. Now, a bit of music and back to the rock interviews.
This is Harry from Palace of the King, and you're listening to White Line Fever.
I'm here with Harry from Palace of the King, and they're on tour in Europe, and we're in Camden at the Electric Ballroom. Tell us about your adventures.
We've been out for a few weeks now. We went to Spain, then France. We've now linked up with the Airborne Crobot Rock and Roll Circus, and played here last night, which was unreal. The place was packed and going completely mental, so we're looking forward to round two tonight. We then break off for another couple of weeks of our own shows, and then link back up with the Airborne guys at the end of the tour for a few more shows in France. So it's grueling. We're doing a hell of a lot, seeing a lot of places, and living out of each other's pockets. It's not exactly glamorous, but it's we wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah, I saw a picture of you under the Eiffel Tower, obligatory photo. It's got to be an enormous buzz. I mean, to be playing some of these famous venues, even though as they're not as glamorous as maybe they seem to be.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's when it does get grueling and we get worn down a bit. There's always moments like that that pick us back up. We wouldn't be seeing these things, doing these things, travelling the world without the band, so we've got a hell of a lot to be thankful for in terms of what we're doing, and you can hear the boys just picking it up inside there now.
Did you know the Airborne boys before you go on tour with them?
Yeah, they've been good friends for quite a while. They've been supportive of our band from day one, and we were lucky enough to tour with them on their last Australian run in 2013, I think. We've go back quite a long way with those guys. They've whether it's even just a little bit of advice, because they've obviously walked the path that we're treading right now, so they're really helpful in terms of the experience that they've had, and just proving that there's light at the end of the tunnel, and these guys have now been doing it for whatever it is, 10, 11, 12 years. And two sold out nights at the Electric Ballroom in London is enough of a reward for many, I reckon.
Can you see yourselves maybe spending 10 months of the year overseas?
We would love to. I mean, we will we'll go wherever the show is, literally. So it's funny, we talked to a lot of people from a lot of different corners of the globe, and it's obviously hard work for an Australian band to get overseas and build a market, because Australia's so far from everything, basically. Yeah, so, yeah. It's just gradually happening naturally that we're spending more and more time overseas as the tour offers and things pick up. So we'll either be on the road or in the studio, pretty much, and that's how we plan to live.
You must have a favourite tour story. Has everyone quit their jobs yet?
Essentially. I mean, we still have to do the odds and ends when we can, to fill in gaps when we're home, to make a little bit of pocket money. But for the most part, it's not possible to maintain a steady job while we're pursuing all this.
And you must have a favourite tour story for this trip? The one you can tell?
Last night was quite fun, actually. I mean, what probably says it all is that I spent most of today retracing my steps from last night to find my phone, which was a casualty of the night. So, we had a good night with a couple of the Airborne guys, a couple of the Crobot guys, and a couple of the Palace of the King guys all hooked up, and we crawled around a couple of bars and basically didn't leave until we got kicked out. The bar was closed, and we just moved along to the next one, and it was a big night. I think I rolled back into our accommodation at 7:30 this morning, and then by 12:30 I realised I didn't have my phone and needed to do a bit of wandering. So I was successful. I've got my phone. All's well that ends well.
I wanna Hey, Ricky Warwick from Black Star Riders here, people, and you are listening to White Line Fever.
Welcome back to the program, and our next guest is none other than Damon Johnson from Black Star Riders. How are you, Damon?
I'm doing fantastic, mate. How are you today?
Doing very well. Just had been having a quick listen, cramming to the new record, Heavy Fire. I will start with a soft question, eh? We'll ease you in. What was different about, you know, if anything, about the recording of this record and the preparation for it to the first two?
That's a great question, by the way. I felt like that we were as confident as we could possibly be as a band, as musicians. You know, we've gotten to know each other so well over the last 4 years that, you know, there's no more kind of wondering, well, is Jimmy going to be able to play this drum part, or how is Robbie going to be to work with in the studios? There was none of that. You know, I think our confidence has grown so much, especially as songwriters, particularly for Ricky and myself, as we continue to write the bulk of the material. I guess really the question that we always have, you just wonder how everyone is going to react to the ideas. What other ideas are they going to come up with? That sort of thing. As you know from talking to different musicians, the studio is very, very different from the concert stage. So it is a bit of a different mindset. But all I can tell you is that in Black Star Riders, we love every facet of it. We love being on stage together, and we absolutely enjoy being in the studio together. And I think you can hear that on the new record for sure.
Having played a few dates with Thin Lizzy in the middle of last year, some festivals in Europe, I just wonder whether it gave you a refreshed perspective on the decision, you know, what was it, 4 or 5 years ago, to not continue as Thin Lizzy. Did it reassure you that it was the right decision? Did it give you some doubts? How do you think things would have been received, and how do you think things would have played out if you'd gone the other way?
That's a fantastic question, mate. Thank you. I think it absolutely reinforced, without a doubt, that we did what was the best thing for the fans. We did it. We did the best thing for the legacy of Thin Lizzy, and we absolutely did the best thing for ourselves to come up with a different name and put out the new music under the name Black Star Riders. And it was so enjoyable to go out and perform as Thin Lizzy again, you know, for the first time in, you know, really over 3 years. And, you know, it was great to play. There are many songs, you know, that we haven't played at all in Black Star Riders. So it was a lot of fun to do that, you know, to play the big stages, to share those events with some other bands. And but it absolutely reinforced it. We did the right thing. And I don't think we could be more proud of what we've accomplished, and I think it energized Scott and Ricky and myself as we went into the studio coming off those Thin Lizzy dates. We were very ready to make that new Black Star Riders record.
Before we play our first song, you mentioned Jimmy DeGrasso earlier. Is he involved in the Rat reunion thing, and how are we going to balance that?
Yeah, man. You know, I saw Jimmy play with the bulk of that band, I think it's been about 2 years ago now, maybe three. And, you know, Jimmy's such a world-class, amazing drummer that he's going to sound great in any situation he's in. I just know that for all of us, you know, we love to play. I love when any of the guys are involved in other stuff. There's no way that, you know, his participating in that is going to interfere with Black Star Riders. I think all the Rat guys are still trying to figure out what they're going to do anyway. It's a great opportunity for Jimmy. And, you know, any time I talk to him about it, he just kind of laughs about the whole thing, because it's, you know, it's crazy to think that he would be at this point in his life and his phone would be ringing all the time from, you know, from all types of people that want to have him come in and play. So I'm happy for him, and, you know, it's got to be a lot of fun.
Okay, time for a song. What do you got for us?
Oh, I get to pick the first one, Anything I Want?
Anything you want, yeah.
Oh, brother, well, why don't we come right out of the gate with, I guess, my favorite rocker off the record. It's the second track on the album, a song called When the Night Comes In. Lots of tempo, lots of ripping guitar. It's a great lead track for the Heavy Fire album.
I walk down Broadway in the bitter cold, see my reflection and it makes me feel so old. Boulevard in deep recession, a winter sky in deep depression. Give me back my broken life, give me serenity beyond this strife. Give me absolute absolution from all this trouble, disarray and confusion. This is a call to innocence. This is a call to warm yourself when the night comes in. There's a crack in the universe when the night comes in. There's a crack in the universe when the night comes in. This is a call to innocence.
Welcome back to the program. Our next guest is Brian from Killer Bee. How are you, Brian?
I'm great, Steve. How you doing, man?
I'm hanging in there. Now, we were just talking off air about, you know, you're a Canadian in Sweden. I'm an Australian in the UK. Can you run through where your band lives, where the members of Killer Bee live?
Well, I always explain it the best after I'm a Canadian, since I'm a Canadian, that if you go to an atlas and you look at the top of Hudson's Bay and you follow that line straight across to Sweden, right to the coast, the east coast of Sweden, you'll find our town. It's called Örnsköldsvik. We're about 300 kilometers south of the Arctic Circle, something like that.
Right.
So we're way the hell up here.
But not all the members live there, though, do they? Like Sean Duncan doesn't live there, for instance.
Well, no, actually, we're an international band, and a lot of our members for the last 20 years have been from all over. Like in the 90s, we were mostly Canadian, and now we're myself, Canada. I have three Swedish. My partner, especially Anders Romblom, we've been partners for 30 years. He's Swedish. our keyboard player, Denny DeMarkey from the Cranberries, he lives in Toronto, and Sean Duncan's in Los Angeles. So, yeah, we're based all over the place.
And how does that work? Like, I mean, is there a lot of sending files backwards and forwards, or do you like to actually, when you're making music, do you like to be in the same room, or how does it work?
we try our best to get into the same room, but often when it comes time to doing finishing tracks, not just the pre-productions, I'm usually traveling to the different parties of the world and doing the work with the musicians separately. We'll come with our tracks of what's been done, and then say I go to Toronto, I'll work with Denny over there on his organs, or I'll go to Los Angeles and work with Sean at that, when that point comes, work with his on his drums and that. Otherwise, we'll be doing our bed tracks and everything here in Sweden. As I produce all the music, it's not so hard to work that way. If we had an external producer, it might be a little harder to work that way.
Yeah, and we're as a band right now. Do you feel that you're sort of on the upswing? You've been getting a lot of good reviews, a bit of airplay, and you're talking to me. That must be a highlight. No, I'm only joking. How are things at the moment? There seems to be a good vibe at the moment.
Yeah, it feels really good. I mean, we've been working a long time, and myself, I'm in my late 50s, so it feels kind of cool to have the attention coming to you after so long, and it's nice. It's nice. I think that people are starting to listen to the music and starting to understand what it is we're all about, because we've been into the same thing for like 25 years, and our production really stems back to the early 70s type of production. It's not this perfectionist type of thing and make sure everything has its place. It's more like, you know, whatever happens, happens. Let's get the feeling of the musician in the session.
And you've just been to America. Is that a hard slog? You know, you're trying to establish yourselves. A lot of musicians, I suppose, at this stage of their careers, they wouldn't subject themselves to that much hard work. You know what I mean?
Well, that's probably true, that they wouldn't subject themselves. But, you know, if you've got a fan base and people that want to hear you, it's probably pretty smart to go to where they are and play for them. So it's cool. I mean, you want to sometimes just sit home and watch a rerun of Friends, but, you know, it's not always the best thing to be doing, right?
Yeah.
I mean, people want to see you, so go do it. And actually, we're on our way to Los Angeles at the end of this month now.
Right, cool. Going back. Yeah, wow.
Yeah, we're going to do a show at the Whiskey A Go Go there, and so that feels pretty cool. I mean, it's a club, but it's one of the premier clubs in the world. You know, like London's marquee.
It is indeed. Now people in America, rock fans are kind of, they always looking to Europe and Scandinavia and saying rock's not healthy here. You know, I wish I lived in Europe. I hear that a lot from Americans. You've gone in the other direction. What was your impression of the scene and the popularity and the health of rock in the States?
Well, I think if I was to give my own opinion on that, as you just asked for, it's basically that it's so much media driven things happen in America, where in Europe I think it's more street level. It's down to word of mouth a lot more than what the media pushes on the people, because people, they seem to use their own minds in Europe. Maybe I'm wrong, and I'm not insulting Americans by saying that, I hope. Yeah. But when you got so much media coming at you and say, this is what's hot, you got to listen to it, you tend to get into that groove, and that's why a lot of styles of music, they change so fast these days. Whereas hard rock and rock, there is a basic, a steady flow of new coming fans and fans that have been there for 40 years. They'll never leave that genre of music. They're always going to be there. And Europeans, they're really steadfast, you know?
Okay, I warned you, Brian, that we'd have a song every 5 minutes. What do you got for us first up?
I'd love to hear you play, and this is an old classic. It's one of my biggest influences I had playing in bed at 12:30 at night and had to run down to send the record man by the album. It's a song called Saber Dance from Love Sculpture, which was Dave Edmonds. We'll be right back. White Line Fever, so rock on.
Welcome back to the program, and I guess you, some of the listeners might think that you just send off an email and then you have an interview and it's very simple, but it isn't always simple because rock shows can be a bit chaotic. So this interview has been a year in the making, so I better make it good. It's Keith Weir from the Choir Boys. How are you, Keith?
How you doing?
We are in Evesham. Which, seems to have more Tudor pubs per capita than any place I've ever been. But for the listeners, can you explain why we're here and what the Choir Boys are up to here tonight?
Well, we're just doing a few added dates from December's Unplugged tour. UK run, so they added a few more in this month. So we've got Evesham, Cardiff, Norwich this weekend, and then we have Nuneaton and Wolverhampton next week.
Right, and this
an electric show in Bedford next week for Guy's birthday.
So, oh, awesome!
Yeah, Chris's birthday bash. So,
and is this the start of the Twisted Love sort of touring, isn't it?
Well, yeah, that actually starts in March. We haven't had a chance to get round and tour in the album yet, but that's happening. Well, there's a ton of shows. Electric shows March and April in the UK.
Mm. And you seem to organise all the interviews, but you don't do many.
No, we don't.
So are you finding the level of interest kind of quite high at the moment? Like, I guess from my point of view, I'm reading a lot about the band at the moment. Seems to be a good response to the new record.
Yeah. It's going great. Really good. Really good. Yeah, it's been a big buzz about stuff. Yeah, we've been working hard on it, you know. We've been traveling, touring a lot everywhere, you know. So just keeping at it, and it's a great buzz at the moment. Yeah, yeah.
Now you recorded the album again. You went back to Sweden.
Back to Sweden.
And,
yeah,
and I believe the town is like there's nothing there. Is that right?
The band in Sweden. There's very little there, I have to say. Very little.
So what was the routine? What's a daily routine when you're recording there?
Well, it's basically the guys, we just spend the whole day there recording and writing, and there's very else little to do, you know what I mean? So it's pretty intense.
Yeah, now I've always, actually, we'll get a song, because it's getting a bit loud in here, so, one song, and then we'll come back, and for the listeners, it'll be the next episode. We'll continue our chat. What song can we play?
One of my favourites off the new album, Stroll On. I love it. My shoes. I tell you this, I tell you that, but it don't faze me none.
White Line Fever. Going to land down under. Going to turn around the corner way down yonder. And I'm not even going to try to rhyme anymore. Michael Monroe here for White Line Fever. And you get a chance, come and check us out live. We're going to rock your socks off and whatever. Rock like fuck. That's what I say. Okay, come on down and rock on.